Welcome to Coffee House Shots from The Spectator. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by my colleagues Isabel Hartman and James Forsyth to discuss the week ahead. A week still dominated by the Brexit campaign, the Remain side had a pretty good week last week with George Osborne's dossier and Barack Obama. Do you think, James, that Leave can fight back? Are they trying to?
I think we see the outlines of a Leave fight back this morning in two pieces by its two biggest hitters, Michael Gove and Boris Johnson. Michael Gove is in the Times warning about what the next round of EU enlargement means for immigration and the strain that will put on public services, particularly the NHS. The Leave camp think that this is their strongest argument, the effect that EU immigration has on public services and particularly the NHS.
I haven't seen anybody from the Leave camp saying that if we leave, immigration is going to come down by this amount or that amount. I mean, they talk in principle about a relationship.
I think their argument is regardless of the overall numbers, the nature of the immigration will be determined by Britain, and it will be therefore be higher skilled, and therefore these immigrants are more likely to be net contributors to the exchequer.
Isabel, would you say that last week was a win for Remain, and what can Leave do? What should Leave do to fight back this week?
I think it was definitely a much better week for Remain than it was for Leave, because you had the most powerful man in the world making an intervention on the Remain side, and even if some voters resented being lectured by a foreign politician, it was the doubts that Obama would have sown in their minds about the Brexit case that the Leave camp really need to respond to. Now, what they need to appear is to be able to calm the fears of voters about what life outside the EU would look like. And actually, the only kind of risky topic for the Remain camp is immigration, which is why Leave has moved on to that, because they can talk about the risks of staying in the EU in the same way as Remain talk about the risks economically of leaving.
Now, James, if you're the Remain camp, then you would attack this immigration assumption pretty hard, wouldn't you? Because the United States has problems with border with Mexico. Norway has got problems with people climbing through the Arctic Circle to get in that way. I mean, leaving the EU would not make our immigration problems go away. So they'd better be very careful if they suggest otherwise.
Yeah, but I think it is. You saw Theresa May, who's normally a very safe pair of hands. She went on Andrew Marr yesterday, and she did struggle on this immigration point, which is it is hot. You cannot deny that as long as Britain stays in the EU, Britain can't control how many people from the rest of the European Union come to Britain to work. I think you also see another kind of strand of a Leave campaign strategy in Boris Johnson's piece in The Telegraph this morning, which is essentially to portray the Leave campaign as the plucky people against the elite and the establishment, to try to turn the fact that you've got, you know, Obama, the IMF, the World Bank, the three main political parties, use a kind of jiu-jitsu move to flip that against the In campaign, and also to suggest that the In campaign are taking it for granted that they've won. I mean, Downing Street's line is that there's no complacency, but they are privately, people at Downing Street are now, for the first time since the referendum actually started, they're talking about breaking 60% in this referendum. That's how confident they are.
Isabel, there is a flicker of normal politics resuming in that we seem to have a climb down from Nicky Morgan, the Education Secretary, over academies. Can you talk us through what's going on right now, because you predicted this climb down a few days ago, didn't you?
Well, this is the latest bit of George Osborne's budget to unravel, and it was actually the flagship announcement that he trailed on the morning of the budget to highlight his social justice credentials. So it's quite embarrassing for him, and it took a while, this revolt, to really brew, but basically Tory MPs and Tory councillors are furious that the government is forcing all schools, even good schools, to change their structures and become academies, and they think this goes against localism. They think it also has a weird kind of contradiction of conservatism, which is surely if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And actually, they'd be forcing good schools to change the way they operate. So given the government's majority is so small, as soon as you had maybe 10 people speaking up in the debate 2 weeks ago criticising it, you knew that these plans were a goner, basically, because they could just find a few more MPs who hadn't broken cover and then they could defeat the plans. And these plans aren't even in a piece of legislation that's been drafted yet. They're in a white paper. So it's much easier for ministers at this stage to save their egos and to say, we've changed our plans, we've finessed them. And they're proposing at the moment to allow councils to set up their own academy chains, which still involves forced academisation, but takes away some of the concerns that Tory MPs have about academy chains not wanting to take over underperforming schools as well.
You predicted this about a week ago. In a few days, I think perhaps even the day after your blog, then Nicky Morgan's people were saying no, absolutely no U-turn, no compromise, Velady's not for turning. And it seems Velady is for turning, or at least turning halfway.
Now's the time to turn as well. It's much easier before you've got a bill on the floor of the House of Commons to make changes to it, because people don't know exactly what's going to be in the bill. So you can say, oh, we were always going to allow this flexibility, rather than having to table amendments at report stage in a rather embarrassing fashion.
I think one of the striking things about this is that none of the potential candidates to succeed Cameron are having a good time at the moment. As Isabel says, George Osborne's budget is continuing to kind of run into trouble. There's a suggestion that part of the reason that there's so much animus against this forced academisation is because Osborne decided to announce it in the budget without any consultation. Then you've got Nicky Morgan, you know, the Education Secretary, who fancies her chances of running as a candidate. She has obviously not been able to persuade Tory MPs to come with her. Then you've got Sajid Javid, who's had a terrible time recently over the EU, where he surprised people by coming out for In, and then Tata Steel when he was caught on the hop in Australia as the plant was announced to be closing. Then you've had Boris Johnson, who hasn't exactly had a great start to the referendum campaign. I think he slightly came off the worst in his mano a mano struggle with Barack Obama. And it does leave you wondering, you know, who it is. You know, the person I think who's currently having the best EU referendum campaign is Michael Gove, but he's insistent that he doesn't want to be leader.
Well, there's a few more weeks for Michael Gove to step in a landmine, as everybody else seems to have done. But Isabel, do you think this will cheer David Cameron up? Because we know that ever since the start of his referendum campaign, there have been two campaigns waged, one for the EU referendum, the other for the Tory leadership. Lots of MPs look at Boris Johnson, Michael Gove, and indeed people like Sajid Javid. They look at their behaviour through the prism of succeeding the Prime Minister who's going to stand down in 3 years' time. So right now it doesn't look as if there is that much appetite for any other rival candidate to launch after the referendum.
I don't think Cameron should be too cheered by the apparent weakness of other candidates, because he still wants to be Prime Minister for a number of years. He's got reforms that he told us in his party conference speech that he wanted to crack on with after the EU referendum. And Tory MPs are so angry and upset with the way that he's conducted this referendum campaign that actually, even if no one challenges him and even if he bumbles along after the referendum, he's still got to be able to get those reforms through the Commons. And as we've seen with the forced academisation revolt, that's going to be very difficult. And he doesn't want to be a lame duck Prime Minister who doesn't get these social justice reforms into his kind of legacy project as he's planned.
I think one of the fascinating things, though, is that Theresa May is taking on the role in this referendum campaign that we thought Boris Johnson would. She is the reluctant inner. She is making clear that, you know, this isn't the deal that she herself would have negotiated, that while she's going to back in on balance, she isn't a great enthusiast for the deal. I do think it is fascinating because it's one of the worst kept secrets in Westminster that Theresa May has very little regard for Boris Johnson. But she's essentially adopting the playbook that lots of Boris Johnson's allies were urging him to adopt, which is, look, you back staying in, but you make it quite clear that this isn't your deal, that you would have done it a bit differently, and that you're a bit more sceptical than Cameron and Osborne. And that is precisely where she is positioning herself.
So are we going to be talking about May for leader?
I think that there was a sense after she backed staying in, which was seemingly at such contradictions with her conference speech, that her chances were gone. But what I think we're seeing is that, you know, this is like a kind of grand national where horses keep stumbling over the fences, you know. And, you know, she fell at about the third fence, but she's got up again now, and she's coming around to Beecher's Brook, and she could get over it.
James and Isabel, thank you very much.